podcasts. It's like radio, but it's not on the radio.
It proved what we felt, what we saw from our draft picks. And this is a credit to Ryan and our scouts, is everything that we thought we saw on tape.
Max strips it! My oh my! Khalil Mack, he is unbelievable!
WGN Radio presents Hogan Johns.
Eddie Jackson, for the fifth time in his young career, has a touchdown.
With WGN's Adam Hogue.
To infinity.
Brother's got a heart.
And beyond.
And from The Athletic, Adam Johns.
Hakuna Matata.
Take you.
Mufasa.
Here they are, the Adams, Hogan Johns.
Touchdown, Bears!
A little Disney flavor.
Disney World. Disney flavor, absolutely. What's your favorite Disney movie?
Lion King.
As a kid?
Lion King? I cannot wait for the new Lion King to come out.
I'm pretty sure it's the same as the old Lion King.
Yeah, but it looks awesome.
But with a lot of CGI. I'm a Peter Pan guy.
Peter Pan. So we got, Joe, we got Luigi and Peter Pan.
Odd choices, man.
Why is Peter Pan an odd choice?
It's odd as like the... Of all the Disney movies?
Yes.
You go Peter Pan.
When I was a kid, yes.
All right.
Lost Boys were cool. Have you seen Hook?
Yes. That movie actually kind of creeped me out when I was a kid. Hook's a little scary.
You do realize Mustafa dies in Lion King, right?
Mufasa. Let's get the most iconic Disney dad of all time.
It's not the most iconic Disney dad of all time.
Let's get his name right. Welcome in, Hogan Johns. New open from our guy Ernie. We appreciate that as always. And we got a kicking competition to break down. Mufasa.
It's Mufasa?
Yeah.
Mustafa. Who's Mustafa?
I don't know.
Sounds like a bad guy. Mufasa was a good guy. Mustafa sounds like a bad guy.
Yeah.
Just Mufasa. In the naming, like Mufasa's father. Why is he Mufasa and the other guy is Scar?
Because he's a bad guy.
His father set him up for that.
I don't know.
I'll call you Scar.
He has a...
Think about that. It's a bad dad. It's a bad grandpa.
Yeah, who maybe Mustafa, or whatever you called him. Mustafa is Mufasa's dad.
Okay.
I didn't think it'd get much dumber than a kicking competition breakdown, but we just managed to do it. Start the podcast. We'll get to all of it. Welcome in. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. You can read us at WGNradio.com/Bears and The Athletic. Subscribe to The Athletic.
I don't think Welcome Adam is active anymore.
You are no longer welcome.
So just find a story, click the story,
yeah.
Subscribe the story. Thank you.
Our producer is Joe Romano. He's in the house.
Let's go, baby.
Culture, history, spaghetti. These are the things of a boot country called Italia. Hello, I'm Joe Romano of Romano Tours. For two generations, my family has provided high-quality tours of Italy to people from all over the world, but mostly Long Island and Jersey.
Paisan.
That's great.
Did you see that over the weekend?
I did, yeah. I got a few texts about it, and then we talked about it on the show, actually. Yeah, it's awesome.
Dude, the Adam Sandler episode was outstanding.
Yeah, it's the first time I recorded SNL in a couple years at least. I mean,
okay.
Adam Sandler is one of those, you know, I grew up with Adam Sandler movies and SNL. Like, he's the man.
I really enjoyed the Sandstorm segment.
Which one was that?
His family reunion.
Oh, yeah, that was outstanding.
Called Sandstorm. Yes.
The Sandler reunion with all the characters.
Yes. Little Nicky was spot on. So was Chubbs.
My wife laughs at the weirdest stuff. Of all the things, like, she'll go a whole episode of SNL, like, without laughing. She went crazy with the skit where it was, like, a war zone, and they kept going to the correspondent out in Tripoli, and he had, like, the Snapchat filters on.
No,
every report he did. And it was, like, it was so stupid, and she's just sitting there laughing her ass off the whole time. And I was just laughing at her. I wasn't even laughing at anyway, I saw that Joe Romano thing on SNL, and I'm like, yes, Got another Joe Romano drop.
Do you like that one, Joe, or the Simpsons one?
Oh, it's hard to choose, man. But Joey Jojo, man, that's at the heart. But this one's also my name.
Right, has your actual name in there.
Culture, history, spaghetti. These are the things of a boot country called Italia. Hello, I'm Joe Romano of Romano Tours.
Family business, baby.
So good. So good. Also, guess what? I bet you Adam Johns doesn't know this. It is Joey Jojo's birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, sir.
We play real birthday songs here.
Best one.
It's so much better than Happy Birthday.
It's the Beatles,
man. Let's be honest. A Happy Birthday song kind of sucks. This is the real thing. All right, let's bring that down before Paul McCartney sues us or something.
Oh boy! Well, thank you very much. Look at this, Adam doing some work for his old pal Joe.
Yeah. Well, I got kind of sick of the kicking competition, and was like, all right, let's have some fun here.
Yeah, I kind of don't want to talk about it, but happy birthday, Joe. For the birthday episode, we will talk about kickers.
Well, actually, okay, we will break down the kicking thing here. But before we get out of here, there were other players at rookie minicamp, and I do want to get you guys, the listeners, to get to know some of these undrafted free agents that I actually think could be factors. You know,
okay.
I don't know if they're all going to work out, but I do think there's maybe three of them that have a legit shot already. Of being part of this thing. So we'll get to know some of those guys, and we might hear from a kicker or two as well. Let's just kind of paint the picture of what happened this weekend at Al's Hall. Because I don't know, certainly in nine, this is my ninth year covering this team, have never covered anything like that.
No.
And I also don't know that I've certainly been out there on days where I've been like, all right, none of this really matters. I mean, rookie minicamp, for the most part, is...
Doesn't matter.
Well, I don't know if it doesn't matter, but it's a lot harder to spot the things in practice that do matter. Let's put it that way.
Fair enough.
So maybe that made it easier to basically walk over to the whole other side of Hallis Hall and watch this kicker thing and not feel like you're missing too much over on the other fields where they were actually practicing.
People need to paint this picture. These fields are not close to each other.
No.
Hallis Hall has been massively expanded, not only the building itself, but they once had two practice fields. Now they have four. So these new fields, call them three and four, are behind the Walter Payton Center, which used to be a drive for some players from the old building.
If you've ever taken the Metra North, I think it's the Milwaukee District North Line, or an Amtrak to Milwaukee.
Or you drive a freight train.
Or if you happen to drive a freight train, you've been by where the new fields are because they knocked down a whole bunch of trees. They put in these nice new fields, and you can actually see them from the train.
Yes.
Which is kind of weird.
So there is literally a marsh and a forest between these practice fields.
Yeah.
So if you're watching the kickers, you cannot see or even really hear what's going on beyond the marsh, beyond the forest.
Beyond the marsh.
Marsh.
That's be kind of a good name for this episode, Joe. Beyond the Marsh, the Bears kicking competition. Okay, and for a guy with a bad knee right now, walking between these two fields, not very fun. By the way, I'm going to call you out for something. Okay. We were walking over to the fields, and then a bunch of other guys came walking back because they were going to the kicking competition. You saw one person, and you could not wait to leave me in the dust.
Who did I see?
I don't know. It was like Jeff Dickerson or something. But you were walking with my slow ass all the way over there. The second you saw somebody else that you could attach to and leave me behind, you did.
Hey.
I mean, Joe, he was gone.
This is a dog-eat-dog world, Adam Hogue.
Just like that. Man.
I got places to be.
Yeah, this kicking competition.
Is that a power walk or what was it, a jog? Would you say it was a jog?
We'll call it a sprint. I don't even remember this. Didn't even realize I did it.
I did yog yesterday for the first time.
Yog.
Since the injury 2.5 weeks ago. I'm getting there.
Call it yogging?
Yeah, that's what I like to call it. What movie is that from again? Yogging. I think it's Anchorman. Is it Anchorman?
Yeah, I think Anchorman 2, actually. Okay. Oh, no, it might be 1.
Yeah, it's... Anyway, all right.
What else? Go ahead, I'm listening.
Yeah, okay. So, this kicking thing. By the way, they hired a kicking coach, Jamie Cole, from the Cole Kicking Camps, which probably most people don't know about, but in the kicking world...
He's a big deal.
He's actually a big deal. And I had a feeling, because all these kickers that ended up at House Hall last week were all from his camps.
I think, other than Elliot Fry, I believe.
Yes, because he's the one guy that has professional experience, albeit in the AAF.
Yes, yes. I think he's the exception. Even the new guy, Pinheiro. Ooh, that's good. He's from Jamie Cole's kicking world.
He is?
Yes.
Okay. Jamie Cole's kicking world.
Yes.
Sounds like an amusement park. okay, so then we go out there and they, I don't know. Does this really matter anymore, what we can and cannot say? I don't even care. They all kick field goals, right? That's how you do this thing. You kick field goals and you see which ones go in.
Well, that's what they're there for.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what else am I supposed to say? So we're standing there on the sideline, and honestly, it's kind of hard to tell if their balls are going in or not.
Yeah.
So a few of us walked down to the goalpost, and I started giving good or bad signals to all the other reporters. We had to attack this thing as a group.
As a team.
That's how we had to do this. So you had half the reporters standing on the sideline tracking the distance, and the rest of us down at the goalpost where I was signaling either the kick was good or it was no good. I mean, they had to have been laughing at us. But I don't care, because we had to track what was going on.
Well, they were tracking, too. They were literally standing behind the kickers with an iPad recording every motion they had.
So here's what I found interesting, because what we did learn is they had like this technology that's sort of like StatCast in Major League Baseball, where, you know, they're tracking ball flight and
velocity.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you call it exit velocity off of a kick, but that's same sort of thing. So all of that, those numbers went into the final decisions that were made. I thought Elliot Fry stood out.
He did.
So he's the one that came over from the Orlando Apollos in the AAF, where I believe he was perfect for them.
I believe you are correct.
Before they all folded.
I think it was 3 beyond 50 as well.
Now, Casey Bednarski was interesting, because he was the guy I was having fun with last week. And, you know, okay, a lot of it was a bit, but because he's Bednarski. I mean, he's a perfect bear.
Yeah.
Long hair.
Kwiatkowski. Yeah.
Backflips, the whole thing. So Saturday, you and I were talking at House Hall, and honestly, Bednarski and Fry were probably the two best kickers on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And they both had strong weekends overall. And Bednarski also, I think, fair to say, had the biggest leg.
He had some good exit velocity.
I thought he had the... I thought he had the biggest leg, but you made an interesting observation. And again,
and you're not talking about his leg being big. You're talking about the
yeah. Well, you didn't seem to like his body type. If we're gonna get that crazy,
he kicked an ugly ball. Just that, go on.
That's what I was getting at, though. You made the observation that he kicks an ugly ball.
Yes, I kept trying to tell you and Pat Finley, who also became obsessed with his story and backflipping. The ball is spinning horizontally, guys. That's not how you want it to be.
Does it matter, though, if it goes through the uprights?
I'm thinking eventually. Yes.
No, I'm with you. I am with you. Because, and I hate to bring this back to Robbie Gold, but Robbie is not so subtly posting daily videos on Instagram of his kicking.
Which is not too far from
just
where we are.
Just a few miles away.
Yes, yes.
In
crappy weather as well. He made that. Did you see that video?
Yeah, I did.
Rain or shine, baby.
Rain or shine. And I, to your point about the ball flight, whatever, his and like perfect
end
spin,
over end,
end
yes.
over end, dead straight. That's what you're looking for. And I will admit, as much as I love Bednarski, and let's be clear, I like the story and the idea of Bednarski okay. more than anything. If we're going to have a kicking competition that we're breaking down, let's have fun with it. And so I'm a little disappointed the Bears did not sign him, because that would have been fun in training camp. Anyway, you're absolutely right, though. The ball was spinning weird. It almost never went directly straight.
Well, they practice kickoffs for a bit too, to open practice. I know some of that may have been a warm-up process, yeah. But there's cameras there.
Well, kickoffs matter.
The scouts are there. People are watching it.
Yep.
Was it always spinning this funky way?
Not every kick was like that, Joe, but as Friday focused more on the kicking competition than Saturday or Sunday. Just a lot of ugly balls being kicked.
Yeah, John Barron, who ended up, he was signed after the draft and then ended up being waived after the weekend. His leg was incredibly inconsistent. Wouldn't you say? I mean, sometimes it looked like he had plenty of distance, and then he had a couple of kicks that, like, Joe, not even kidding, were like 7-8 yards short of the goalpost.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, you don't want that.
Yeah, but by no means are we experts in kicking, but we've seen a lot of kicks in our day. We did watch Robbie Gould for a good portion of our
beat writing
history here. And yeah, there was a lot of inconsistency. Some of the mechanics seemed to be off. The flight of the ball. There were a few balls lost. Let's put it that way. Amongst the construction and the marshes around Hallis Hall.
Yeah, it seemed like they started kicking the other direction because they kept losing footballs.
What about, was there a snap? Was there a hold? Or was it just on a tee? Or?
So, both.
Yeah, they did both. They did the first round was just, do you still call it a tee? Because it's not like a kicking
tee.
That
thing's got a name.
The contraption that holds the ball like a holder would.
Right.
Yeah.
The kicking contraption. There's a name for it.
Anyway, the first round was just that. And then the second round they did do snaps and holds, and they would get redos if the operation was poor. There are a couple of guys that would miss, and then they'd say, no, I'll do that one again because it was a poor snap or a poor hold or something like that, just to be fair. So we're bringing all this up because it was actually for rookie minicamp, to me, it was very interesting to watch.
Yes.
I mean, it was entertaining. It felt like a competition. And then when it was all said and done at the end of the weekend, two men were left standing, Elliott Fry and Chris Blewett, Chris Blewett didn't really impress me that much. In fact, he struggled on Friday.
Well, maybe he got better on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. So those were two guys that were already signed before the weekend, so none of the tryout guys were kept on. And then they go out and they trade for a kicker from the Bay Area. Not that kicker from the Bay Area, though. His name is Eddie Pinheiro.
Pinheiro.
Played at Florida. Was perfect, I think, in the preseason last year with the Raiders. It was only a few kicks, though. And then he got hurt, and he was on IR. And the Bears traded a 2021 seventh-round pick.
Yes. Conditional.
This reminded me of when two schools like Georgia and Oklahoma announce a series 10 years from now
they're
going to play in football.
So the Raiders only get the pick if Pinheiro is on their roster for 5 games. So essentially, it's another... Look, the competition is continuing. They basically got him for nothing. A kid with tons of potential. Yeah. Kicked an 81-yarder.
He has tons of potential.
Yeah. Look, people are mocking this kicking competition.
Well, it is kind of ridiculous.
Well, this is exactly what they said they were going to do, though.
All right. I'm going to say two things here that are a little opposite, but okay. It's ridiculous they're in this situation. Let's put it that way. The fact that it's even come to this, it means a lot of mistakes have been made at that position, which they've all been well documented.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to give them credit for two things. Because Pace and Nagy promised that this was going to be thorough and they were going to look under every single rock in the world. And that's what they're doing.
Yes.
I mean, this thing has been expansive and they're doing their homework. And they went out and they hired a kicking coach. He's going to be a consultant, but he's around the whole year. I mean, so they're doing all the things they should do.
Yeah.
And I also like Nagy's approach here, that they're going to be open and honest about their mistakes and all the stuff that's happened. The fact he had those guys kick from 43 yards is perfect. I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
And, I mean, those are the things that you got to love about Matt Nagy and embracing this situation and for what it's worth. But it's still ridiculous that they're in this spot.
Well, I think a lot of teams have kicking issues. I think those who are mocking it weren't listening or paying attention to what Pace and Nagy have been saying for weeks upon weeks now in every public interview that they've done, this is what they said they wanted, and they are getting it. Yeah. They've already tried the veteran route. The only veteran they would entertain is Robbie Gould, and right now they're not trading for him because the 49ers are going to play hardball with their veteran kicker.
Right. Well, that situation is what we said a couple
weeks ago. Okay, so they've already moved on from the veteran route. They've tried your Connor Barthes. They've tried your Cody Parkeys. They tried Roberto Aguayo. Mike Nugent came in here for a cup of coffee. They've tried their veterans. They're looking for a younger guy to fit their younger team. That's what they want now.
And Carlos Santos.
And Carlos Santos.
I give them credit for the work they're doing. But not overly optimistic with how the thing's going so far.
It's funny because let's assume that they go with a young guy. There's going to be a lot of unnecessary pressure on this kid because of what happened last year, you know?
And that's why they're putting him through the gauntlet. That's why they're making 75 rookies stand on the 50 while so-and-so has to go out, whether it's Chris Blewett, Blueway, whatever you want to call him, Redford Jones, whomever has to go out there and kick a 43-yarder in front of them.
And that's why I also think it's important that Nagy's talk openly, honestly talk. The fact that they showed, they've been showing the missed kick, the double doink. Apparently the rookies all came in. They're like, hey, this is what's going on here.
It was beyond the rookies. They showed it to the regular team.
Yeah.
The veterans.
I love that, though. I love... Now, okay. Here, you were there Sunday. I was not. I was at the White Sox game Sunday. Was Nagy that upset about Bednarski with the backflip, or was that just sort of... Because I went back and I watched the video. I listened to it, too. But it's different when you're there. What was the...
It didn't seem like it was one of those we not a me thing or me not a we thing.
Yeah.
It didn't seem to have the same angst as the Cody. Like, that's my measuring stick. That's my gauge for Matt Nagy Fuhrer.
I will say, I think the WGN Morning News missed out on a big opportunity to have all the kickers who were not signed after the weekend on the morning show on Monday.
Yes.
They could have done a whole Today show.
Oh, man.
It would have been classic.
Yes. So, I guess I could see where he could be angry. Because you don't want your kicker doing backflips.
Yeah, but and he brought up the Martin Gramatica, broke his whole
ACL, right? Yeah, towards ACL, yeah. Celebrating.
When I was at the Sox game, I saw these tweets from you guys that Bednarski won the last second field goal thing and did a backflip to celebrate. I was surprised that Nagy was against it when you guys all tweeted that, because this is a guy that's embracing Club Dub and the fun.
BU. And yes, yes.
And so that, I was surprised, but I also didn't know how serious it was. But then the guy didn't get signed.
I
don't think it has anything to do with that.
No. I think you're trying to connect two dots when there was a lot of dots in between that, if that makes sense. They looked at a lot of things. Like we just talked about, he had some horizontal kicks. Yes, he made his three field goals in that competition. Yes, he seemed to fire up the defensive players there, but it was more than that. You know, there's a personal evaluation here, too. Don't you think they had conversations with these guys before, after, during everything
sure.
they were doing?
Yeah. I mean, it's no different than any other position. You culture in the locker room, who's a good guy, all that stuff. It's all part.
Now I will say this. I did find it interesting that it was Redford Jones and Bednarski out there kicking, and neither of them were kept in that final competition.
Yeah, that was... To me, that's the only reason why I did wonder if the backflip had anything to do with him not being kept. Because it almost seemed like, okay, well, maybe we're going to keep one of these two guys. Now, also on the other side of that, to have it all come down to one kick also seems kind of short-sighted.
Yeah.
So I doubt that they were really doing that.
Yes, yes. I almost wonder if that little kicking competition was a test for Nagy, because I think he's going to do something very similar when the veterans arrive.
Yeah.
The whole, let's
to put the pressure
watch
on
everybody,
guys.
You know, let's get everybody to watch the kicking competition. Let's have these guys kick from various spots. That will change when Pat O'Donnell is holding snaps and Patrick Scales is snapping.
Well, hopefully the snaps are better, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
There were.
What else? Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah, what else do we need to Did we cover the kicking competition?
I think so.
Joe, do you have
it's any, ongoing. Everybody.
Do you have any questions since you weren't there?
Yeah, I don't think I have any questions about this. Adam and I were kind of talking about this pre-show, just how silly it is that, you know, I understand they lost because of a kick, but there's no other team in the entire league that's talking about kicking this much, you know?
Well, and I'll just be honest, like, I felt kind of stupid standing there watching all these kicks and, like, missing practice on the other field.
Well, that's why I left Saturday and Sunday.
But I also felt like this is a story, and this is what we're going to talk about on the podcast. This is what needs to be written about, so I got to do my job at the same time. But the whole thing seemed so ridiculous. I don't know.
Well, it looks like they're going to have 3 for OTAs and minicamp. I think it's going to be 2 for training camp.
You think they'll narrow it down? I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah, I think you're looking at an Elliott Fry versus a Pinheiro.
I mean, at some point, you can't spend that much time and energy on... Like, just think about the way a regular practice works once we get to training camp, or even probably in OTAs when the veterans are there. Like, you have special teams periods. And your special teams coordinator has to be there to coach up all the other players on the team, the linebackers, the tight ends, the safeties, and everyone who are playing special teams. He can't be on a different field with the kickers the whole time.
Now, I will say this. I will say this. How many times have we watched camp where those specialists are literally doing nothing?
I'm with, well, that's why I think hiring Jamie Cole
yes,
makes sense.
Yes,
because
exactly.
You can always have him working
you
over
there. You got 4 fields down in Bourbonnais. Yes, they go out there for a little bit, but now you can actually send a kicking coach out there. You hired another special teams assistant. You have resources you have poured into this financially and time-wise, and you got the fields to use not only at Halas Hall, but in Bourbonnais.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you promised to do and find the right answer.
I think they're working on it. It just better work, because you're talking like week 1, week 2.
Yes.
Any time in the first part of the season, you're having missed kicks.
Well, here's the other reason why you go the young route. They're expendable.
Right.
You're not locked into somebody's million-dollar, multi-million-dollar contract that discourages workouts, that discourages a true competition. Cody Parkey's contract did that.
Still paying for it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So take that and think about that for a little bit.
All right, there were other players there.
No.
And
I watched them. I did. I had enough of the kicking competition.
So at what point did you know Tommy Doles, my guy Tommy Doles, was going to get signed?
Probably when Alex Bars was not practicing.
Well, he's still coming off the ACL, right?
Yes.
Alex Bars.
Yes,
so.
Yes. And I'm allowed to talk about this because he was asked, Matt Nagy was asked about Bars. On the first day by Chris Emma.
Well, we're also allowed to
observe, report,
give participation. You're always allowed to report okay. Who's practicing, who's okay. Not.
So. I forget. Everything's so convoluted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I every day it's different. The moving goalposts. It's not just for the kickers, it's for the reporters, too. Yeah, so Tommy Doles gets signed. He played at Northwestern. Great kid. Dad's a sports director and TV reporter in, I think, Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Really?
Yeah. So Tommy's a great quote. Fortunately, we didn't get to talk to him over the weekend because he was a tryout player, but maybe at OTAs. I do want to get you guys to get to know some of these others. So last week, you know, we broke down the draft, talked about the draft picks, we talked a little bit about some of the undrafted free agents, but now we got a chance to actually talk to these guys.
Yeah.
I did have Elliott Fry. You know what? Forget it.
Oh, playing it?
I'm done with the kickers.
Okay.
I was going to play Elliott Fry for you guys, but
we've moved on.
We've had enough kicker conversation. There are 3 guys that I do want to talk about. Should we start with Dax Raymond or Emmanuel Hall?
To Dax Raymond.
Okay, so Dax Raymond, the Bears, two of these, I don't want to say Emmanuel Hall is not interesting, he is, but 2 of these guys are fascinating in that Dax Raymond is an older prospect because he served a Mormon mission in Russia, where you just like give up football. I mean, there's no...
2 years.
You're going to hear, I'm going to play some of this for you. It's really interesting hearing him talk about this. And then another guy is a French-Canadian. So I found these two guys interesting. We're going to hear from both of them. But here's Dax Raymond. We had a chance to talk to him the other day, and this starts with why he chose the Chicago Bears as an undrafted free agent.
Well, first, I love this program. Growing up, I've been a big fan of the Chicago Bears. And second, they didn't have a huge group of tight ends here, so I thought it was a good fit for me to come here and try and make the team.
How much connections or how much conversations did you have with them maybe before?
I interviewed with them at the combine, so I did know they had some interest in me before the draft process.
As you're learning Matt's playbook here, how do you think you fit in, and does it fit your skill set?
Absolutely. I've seen there's some plays that we actually ran that were very similar to what I ran at Utah State. So yeah, I enjoy this offense. I'm still learning it. I don't know much about it, but what I do know, it's been a blast.
How would you characterize the usage of the tight end in the offense from what you do know about it?
Well, they're just as important as a receiver and just as important as an offensive lineman, where they got to be able to catch balls and they got to be able to block.
Mm-hmm. Matt talks about how playing tight end's a really hard position for a rookie because you have to know all the blocking stuff and all the receiving stuff. Is there anything in your past that leads you to think you can pick this up quick?
I served a mission in Russia, so I learned the Russian language, and I believe that gave me confidence that if I can learn the Russian language, I can pick up a playbook.
How long did that take?
To learn the language? Ooh, I lived there, so that helped me a lot, but I'd probably say 6 months.
Okay. Assuming this playbook is in the English alphabet?
Yes. It helps. It helps that it's in English, for sure.
So when you made the decision to take the time for your mission, what was the process? Was there any debate? Were you concerned that it could impact eventually your football career?
I knew it would impact my football career, but I had made the decision that I was going to serve a mission when I was young, so I didn't have a hard time making that decision because I had made it when I was so young.
And when you were on your mission, any working out, any training, or were you just away from football for a couple of years?
Yeah, you really don't have any time to think about football because you're committed to your service there. You get 30 minutes a morning to work out, so that's about it.
And how difficult was it to reacclimate to the game once you came back?
Honestly, not bad at all. I mean, I missed the game, and I mean, I was dying to get back out here. So I was, you know, ecstatic to get back on the field.
Could you follow football from Russia?
I did not follow any football. I remember, when you're on a mission, your family can only email you once a week. And I remember getting an email, I think it was from my mom, saying, oh, by the way, the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. And I didn't even know the Super Bowl was that week.
Wow. So you're pretty much cut off from the world when you're doing that.
Yeah, you commit everything, you put everything that you know home aside and go and commit your service to the Lord.
So how much did age come up throughout the draft process then?
People ask me about that just because, yeah, I'm 2 years older, which makes sense. You know, you want younger guys, but I think it can also be a positive with maturity. You know, serving a two-year mission, I feel like I'm more mature than the average person graduating from college.
That's right. You can call home on Mother's Day and what else, right?
Yeah, you could just Skype on Mother's Day and Christmas for an hour. That's it.
Wow. We're in Russia.
So my mission was called the Russia-Vladivostok mission, which is the Far East. Yeah. So it's, you know, by Japan, China, and gets up into Siberia.
Wow. Siberia.
Yeah.
Did you spend some time there?
Yeah, I got to go up there. There's some cities in there that people serve in. I was lucky I didn't serve in there too much, so it wasn't too bad.
So if it's cold here, it's nothing.
Yeah, no, this is nothing.
Dex, a number of the independent analysts have been more complimentary about your receiving than your blocking. Are you concerned at all about adjusting the blocking in the NFL? Where do you feel you're at as a blocker?
You know, I think with some coaching, I think I can get there because I know I'm willing and I have the body and I'm physical. It's just some technical problems or things that I just haven't learned that I can. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks
for coming back out.
Appreciate it.
So there he is, Dax Raymond, who went to Siberia.
Siberia. Not quite New York, but Siberia.
That's interesting stuff, though, because, you know, you hear about these football players in college that, you know, especially from BYU, Utah State, where he went, that go on these Mormon missions. And I didn't really know too much about, like, what you're allowed to do while you're there. And, I mean, he basically had to give up football for 2 years, come back. Now he's 2 years older. which may have contributed to why he went undrafted. But this is a guy that kind of fits in the Trey Burton position on this team. And I know it's rookie minicamp. The guy made some great catches over the weekend.
Oh, on Sunday, he was probably one of the best players on the field. Even Matt Nagy, not only was he asked about it, but Matt Nagy went as far to say he was impressed with him the entire weekend. Oh, big plays, big.
Friday, he made
long arms.
He ran right up the seam and made an incredible over-the-shoulder grab on a ball that, I mean, let's be honest, these quarterbacks that over the weekend weren't that great. Yeah,
I actually liked how hard they were throwing the ball. They're willing to take chances, but go on. Yes.
But he made this great catch, like sort of like a center fielder just going straight, you know, straight towards the wall over the shoulder. It was great. Great. So he's going to be fascinating to watch. He's someone I think Bears fans should know, and that's why I want to play that audio there, because I think he's going to be somebody that, you know, it'd be interesting, because I don't know if he's going to be an early candidate for the Daniel Braverman, Tanner Gentry award from training camp. I have a suspicion, though, he's going to be more than that, though, that he's got a chance to stick around and actually make this team.
Well, just look at the depth chart. It's Trey Burton, Adam Shaheen, and Ben Broniker. Usually you keep four. The Bears kept four last year with Daniel Brown. Now, were they always active? No, but obviously there's a need there. Obviously, you're still waiting for Adam Shaheen to come into something. But look, Trey Burton was an undrafted guy himself not too long ago, who has emerged as the Bears' number one tight end in kind of a diverse role. So obviously, Dax Raymond, with some of his attributes, could maybe be the primary backup. Because Broniker's not. You know, Broniker usually backs up Shaheen. So you have that need for the U tight end.
Well, I think we saw when Burton was out, you know, they need somebody else to step in. So that's why I think you're right. With the depth chart and the need there, I think Dax Raymond's somebody that you should, you know.
You should get to know. Yeah, and don't worry about his age. Leonard Floyd was an old draft pick, an old first top 10 draft pick. He was, what, 23, 24?
Yeah.
When he was drafted, you know, even
so, Kyle Long was 23.
Yes.
Older.
Yes, because he played baseball for a year. So you have these things happen. Who's the tight end the Eagles drafted?
This year?
Last year, yes.
Oh, last year.
Last year. He was an older guy, too. And he was a first or second round pick. So, look, it happens. Everyone's got their own paths. It's not like he's an old 27 quarterback drafted by the Browns or anything like that. This guy.
Oh, you're thinking of the guy at South Dakota State. Yeah.
Yes.
He was good. What the guy? Now I'm blanking on his name. I know exactly what you're talking about. I loved him coming out.
He was a first-round pick, was he not?
And he had a great year.
Yeah, played baseball.
Yeah.
Can't think of his name. But yeah, there we go. Don't worry about his age.
All right. Then there's Matthew Betts. French Canadian from Laval University. Now, I don't know. I don't know that I'm as confident that he's going to stick. I do think the Bears need some depth at that position at outside linebacker, and I was advocating that, you know, that's a spot they might want to look in the draft, which they ended up just going the undrafted free agent route there, just the way the draft board played out. So he's got a chance.
Dallas Goedert. Sorry.
Yeah, Dallas Goedert. There you go. Thank you.
49th overall. Go on.
But another interesting story here. Now, he's going to be transitioning from defensive line, Canadian football. Rules are a little different, to listed as an outside linebacker. Sounds like he's going to be playing outside linebacker as an edge rusher.
Correct.
But he can rush the passer. So you're going to hear the accent here. He's from Montreal. He's a French Canadian. In fact, I gave a shout out to, there was actually a Canadian reporter
the entire weekend.
Yes. Richard Boutine. I hope I'm saying that right.
Boutine, like poutine?
Yeah, I don't know. Boutine.
Boutine.
B-O-U-T-I-N. Hey, you can follow him on Twitter.
So Boutine like poutine. Sorry. Go ahead.
At R Boutine, B-O-U-T-I-N-J-D-Q.
Oh, it's definitely like poutine.
He works for a daily newspaper in Quebec City. I talked to him a little bit because he was sitting next to me in the media room. Now, half his tweets...
I talked to him, too.
Half of his tweets are in French. So, you got that. But, and by the way, Matthew Betts was drafted third overall. in the CFL draft on Thursday, which they were actually having meetings at Hallis Hall once the rookies all got there when he got drafted. Third overall. So the Edmonton Eskimos will hold his draft rights in the Canadian Football League. He's obviously going to try to make the NFL, but if it doesn't work out with the Bears and he doesn't sign anywhere else, he can go back to Canada and play for the Edmonton Eskimos next year. Anyway, here he is, Matthew Betts. Enjoy the accent. I love it.
I don't think there's nothing about the rules. I think it's just more of the system that's different from college, and that's pretty much from any college. A lot of people in college play the spread game. There's obviously more people in the box here, so the playbook, the system that the different team plays, but for the rules and all that stuff, I don't think it'll be a big issue.
You think being a little closer to the ball will help you out from your position?
That's for sure. That the yard, I wouldn't say it's an issue, but it's easier to be on the line of scrimmage instead of a yard. That's for sure. That's a plus.
Were you used to just teams doing everything they could to kind of stop you with tight ends and fullbacks and tackles?
I got that a lot back in college, so hopefully it won't be as much up here, so it might maybe free me out a bit.
Playing football at seven,
right? That's correct.
What got you started? I mean, was there someone you watched?
Well, my father brought me to high school state championship, I guess. So it got me going on that part, and just ended up playing youth football back from my city in La Salle with the Warriors. So obviously liked it a lot. Played ever since. Played a bunch of sports growing up, but that really stuck as my main sport. So obviously that was for sure.
How long did you play competitive hockey?
I stopped in like grade 12. So okay. Yeah.
Were you with
for a while? I played a bit of both. Towards the end, I wasn't playing too seriously, so I was more of a bruiser playing forward. But if I would have kept it seriously, I would have been a defenseman, that's for sure.
Never goalie, though, right?
No, never had. I don't think I would have been good either.
You weren't a goon, were you?
I was a goal scorer, I'm telling you. A big goal scorer, yeah.
I walked up a minute or two late, I apologize. What was yesterday like for you? I understand the CFL draft was yesterday, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, I my phone was off. When we finished meetings, just got back in the bus. I think I got drafted like 30 minutes before. Had the chance to talk to the head coach, the GM, up in Edmonton. So at least I had a little chat with them. My main goal for me is to stay with the Bears. I want to contribute as best way as I can with the Bears, and they're totally aware of the situation. So and they're okay with it. So I hope maybe one day. I'll be able to play with this organization. I would love it, but for now, my feet are in here, and that's what I want to be.
So you were actually busy in meetings here when you got drafted?
Yeah,
up there?
I knew kind of the draft was actually had started. I didn't know if I would be drafted later because I had a camp invite for the NFL, so I wasn't quite sure when I would get off, so yeah.
And they keep your rights for a set amount of years? Or for?
Honestly, I'm not even aware of that situation, but I think if I have to report, they will own my rights. So, yeah.
What are your strengths?
I would say effort, motor, on the third and long, obviously. I think I'm good at pass rushing. I want to show that I can do a bunch of things here to get the playbooks right in. And I just want to be positive about it. So obviously we're a team now. We're competing for a roster spot, but obviously I want to help out everybody the best way that I can to show that I'm here for the good reasons and to help the Bears winning.
So they have you as a 3-4 outside linebacker here. How big of an adjustment is that for you?
It's not that bad. I would say I do similar things that I did at Laval. I drop more in coverage, so that would be the biggest difference. The terminology is a bit different to what you were used to. The playbooks or the offensive system is a bit different. But other than that, I think it stays football. So obviously you don't have to see it too much. It's some really good football. It's the NFL, but you just got to – you're playing football, so it's not that big of a deal to me.
In terms of popularity and success and whatnot, not knowing a thing about Laval, how if you were to pick a college program here, what level would that be on, you know, in terms of notoriety and so forth? I think I saw somebody said it's the Alabama of
Laval.
Is that accurate?
Well, I'd like to think so. I mean, we just won a bunch of championships the last couple of years. I had the privilege to win two. I went to three national championships in my 4 years there. So obviously, every year we're competing for championships, and I'm pretty sure that the team this year will be successful. The coaches in place do a great job. It's a second to none organization, and that's the reason why I wanted to be part of it. And I think that's one of the reasons that got me here.
You got to say organization. In not just French Canadian, like in hockey, you know this. You covered hockey,
yes.
I mean, Joe Quenneville, organization.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
To go back to our Disney
organization.
To go back to our Disney references, he's the candlestick guy.
Oh, yeah.
From Beauty and the Beast.
Now I couldn't. This is probably bad, but I couldn't, because I'm definitely not making, I love the accent. I couldn't get, have you seen Super Troopers 2?
No, I have not.
Okay, hilarious. If you like, here's what I'll say about Super Troopers 2. If you like the first one, you'll like the second one.
I love it, yes.
Like most movies, it's not as good as the first one, but if you like the humor, you like the general, you know, you're going to enjoy it. You're not going to come away being like, oh, that's a total waste of time. But the whole premise is that they're battling over like an area in Vermont that was in Canada and that's now going to become part of America. So they're dealing with all these French Canadians the whole time. And I could not get those accents from the movie, which are embellished and supposed to be funny, out of my head as Matthew Betts was talking.
Why is Luc Robitaille and Fran Tarkenton in the same sentence?
Because it's one of the bits in the movie. Like, you know how they're always pulling people over and messing with them?
Yes.
Like, that's what they're doing.
Luc Robitaille.
Let's hear that one more time if we can. It's so funny.
Frère Jacques, Grey Poupon Marquis de Saint-Tourette, whoop, feather duster, croissant, les miserables, frère catcher, Luc Robitaille, D'Artagnan, Perrier, friend, Tarkin, Don Pinot, poster, parfait.
Now, there was a fart in there. There was a Grey Poupon in there.
That's why some of the behind-the-scenes stuff is better, because I don't understand how you could get through that entire, like, 10-second blurb or whatever without just, like, losing it. I mean, he just runs right through all those. And maybe he said it 100 times, and that's, you know, that's part of acting. But
And they're probably, it's probably improv, like, as they're filming that. It's probably just saying a bunch of random stuff off the top of his head.
Yes. I once ran into a very drunk Luc Robitaille after the Kings won the Stanley Cup back in, 2012 or something like that.
Covered. How was his accent?
Sometimes. Oh, at that point, he was all over the place, like that guy.
Anyway. So those are two fascinating undrafted free agents.
Yes.
Talk about storylines. Those will be good ones.
Well, it's a neat position. Again, now Chuck Harris, the kid from Buffalo, is another kid to watch at outside linebacker. But, again, beyond... What? Who's the top backup? Aaron Lynch again? So beyond Leonard Floyd, Khalil Mack, and Aaron Lynch, you have Kylie Fitz and Isaiah Irving. So you have a need there that you're going to try to address with some undrafted guys.
Yeah.
Just fine. It happens. I'm trying to find a diamond in the rough.
Absolutely. And then there's another guy here that I want to play for you that we talked about last week. When we had Dane Brugler on, because Dane had some insight from talking to people at Mizzou about his availability, and that's Emmanuel Hall. Why did Emmanuel Hall fall out of the draft when he's got blazing speed? He dealt with an injury last year, missed some time, and I guess apparently that was one of the knocks on him. Here's what I'll say about Emmanuel Hall. Both in watching some of his interviews last weekend after he went undrafted and then getting a chance to talk to him over the weekend, I like his attitude. Like, I like how he's attacking this whole thing, and he's obviously got a chip on his shoulder. And if he attacks practice that way, then he's going to have a chance. Albeit, this is a much different situation at wide receiver, because the wide receiver room stacked.
Loaded.
So, and that's one of the things I wanted to ask him about, too, is why he picked the Bears when... you look at the depth chart, and it's a tough situation. So here he is, Emmanuel Hall and Hallis Hall over the weekend at rookie minicamp.
How do you go about proving to not only the people here, but to the rest of the league that in May you can be healthy in October and November?
Do it. That's the only way. At the end of the day, I got to be healthy at this level. You're not worth anything if you're not on the field. At the end of the day, you got to help the team. So I know I can stay healthy. Last year was a fluke. I've never missed games for an injury before. And that, might have cost me, my draft stock. But at the end of the day, that's not really my worry. It's like I'm out here. It's a fresh start. And I'm healthy and I'm ready to go.
Any type of introspection that goes on after not getting drafted in terms of things you want to look at your own self,
the way you go about your business, the way you carry yourself, the way anything, you know, that as you kind of take inventory of how to move forward?
Really not. It just, like, you know, taught me, you know, you just always got to remain positive, because no matter how hard you work, no matter how hard you try to show that you're something, some people just aren't going to necessarily take that in. So at the end of the day, I'm always positive. And like I said, I have the confidence. I know what I can do. And at the end of the day, whether I'm undrafted free agent or whether I'm drafted second round, I'm still bringing the same mentality. And so when the lights are on, you know, on Sunday, you know, I'm trying to show out, and you best believe I'm trying to show out. So I'm excited for the whole thing.
Apologies if you answered this earlier, but why the Bears?
Coach Mike Furry. Coach Mike Furry. I mean, the whole coaching staff, really, the culture here is, it's a winning culture. I mean, I'm just excited to work with this team. You know, they had a really good season last year, so I'm excited to join the process and move on with them.
How'd you get to know Coach Furry? Just through the draft process?
Yeah, through the draft process. It was actually my last 30 visit, and or actually my second to last, and, you know, we just connected real well. You know, I think he believes in me, and I'm just trying to prove them right. So,
what is it about him that it seems like guys just tend to like him right away? What is it about his personality or coaching style or whatever that attracted you?
He's a super genuine coach. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, there's some coaches that you can kind of tell aren't really into you, and there's some coaches that, you know, want the best for you. I think, you know, all the coaches want the best for me here. It's a family. It's a family culture, and that's why this is a winning program. So, like I said, I joined it because it's a winning culture. You know, who wouldn't want to live in Chicago? It's an awesome city. And then, you know, just you know, moving on. So
when you're weighing destination as an undrafted free agent, you probably didn't think going in the weekend you're going to be in that situation. Yeah. But when you're weighing those situations, I mean, how much are you looking at the depth chart, too? Because it's a pretty good wide receiver room here.
You know, I was kind of looking at the depth chart. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I said, I'm confident in my abilities. And I know that Coach Furry can take me to a whole new level. So I'm just ready to, you know, get to work. You know, who's on the depth chart, who's not on the depth chart, it really isn't a matter of mine. I mean, at the end of the day, my work's going to prove for itself. My results are going to prove for itself. And that's what I plan to do, so.
How fast did that situation play out last Saturday?
It felt like the longest 3 days of my life. I mean, truly, because I had a draft party on the second day and third day, and, you know, just shaking everybody's hand, thanks for coming. No one wants to do that. So I think, you know, it's a motivational thing for anybody that goes through that. But, you know, it just is what it is. I mean, it's my situation. But at the end of the day, I know what I can do, and so I'm ready to prove
it. When you turn the page, though, from, all right, looks like I'm going to be an undrafted free agent, mm-hmm. I mean, how quickly did you decide on the Bears?
Oh, just like almost immediately. I mean, there was, you know, 20 plus offers, but the Bears stood out to me. Coach Mike Furry stood out to me. You know, this is a great program. So
20 plus offers.
Yeah. But 32 teams passed on him in the draft.
Still, though. And he chose the Bears.
Despite the fact that they drafted a wide receiver, they already have a pretty good group. I find that very interesting. And obviously, Mike Furry made a huge impression on him.
Yeah, that makes me wonder, you know, the trajectory that Furry is on. Is he headed towards being an offensive coordinator and, you know, onward and upward from there, too?
I mean, it certainly helps when you have players that love you, you know. And I got the impression last year that he was well liked by those wide receivers. Now that doesn't mean you can necessarily go on and be an offensive coordinator. You got to show the ability to, you know.
And your team has a little bit more success.
Sure.
Success. Did I say sex? Success.
And more sex too. I mean, that never hurts. we'll see where Mike Furry's headed, but I do think that it's to hear a guy like that. And a lot of times, when these guys, we go through this every year, especially in rookie minicamp. Why'd you pick the Bears? Oh, I just, you know, love everything about team. You know, they're gonna say all the right. Or like David Montgomery the other day, I think he was maybe getting a little tired of Mark Potash's questioning. Welcome to Chicago, David Montgomery. And he, what was Potsy asking him? But it, essentially, are you happy? Would you have rather been a first or second round pick somewhere else, or been a third round pick and come to the Bears? And he was like, be a third round pick and come to the Bears. Sorry, I'm not sure I believe that. I think he'd rather be a first round pick.
It's also a tough question for a rookie who's meeting the media for the first time after his second practice.
Correct.
With the team?
Yes, and I'm not criticizing the answer by any means, but let's be honest, there's a huge difference in money
from being a first round pick to being a third
job
round
security
pick.
First and second round picks gets they seem to get a lot of chances.
Yeah,
but teams not third round picks do too. But
well, especially when there are no first or second round picks.
Yes, like Montgomery he's like the first round pick.
Montgomery's got the first round pick treatment at rookie minicamp.
Yes, he's got the pressure. Yes,
if there had been two other guys drafted ahead of him, he would not have gotten that same attention both from the media and the Bears over the weekend on social media and the whole deal. The point I was getting at though. Is these guys are kind of trained to say all that stuff when they show up to the facility. Yeah, I wanted to be a Bear the whole time, no matter what. I got the sense talking to Emmanuel Hall, though, as he voluntarily brought up Mike Furry and that connection, that was genuine. And I think it's also backed up by the fact that he could have gone other places where maybe it'd be easier to make the 53-man roster than it will be here.
Yes. Look, undrafted free agency, in terms of things that get mocked by outsiders, it is because they're undrafted guys. They get passed up for various reasons. But a lot of teams build their rosters this way. The Patriots, so many of them do it. The Ravens. It's a great way to keep your team young, to keep your salary cap situation healthy. And you find players if your scouting is on and your recruitment of these players is on. That's what those top 30 picks are. Top 30 visits are for. Chuck Harris, the guy from Buffalo, had one too. Those connections are made. They want to join your team.
That's a great name, by the way, Chuck Harris.
Chuck Harris.
Yeah.
Yes. So, look, the position for him, he's up against it. Maybe Javon Wims is on the hot seat if he becomes something, but we'll see.
All right. Well, that's a recap of
rookie minicamp.
Rookie minicamp. I think we did okay.
Yeah. What else? Go ahead. I'm listening.
That's about it, buddy.
That's it, Matt.
That is going to wrap it up.
Yep. Let's do some backflips and get out of here, or not.
We got a week in between before we have access to OTAs. Then we'll have some more stuff from there. Then I'll be veteran minicamp. And then before you know it, we'll be talking about Bourbon A.
Yep.
This is
comes
where
the break before camp.
This is where everything speeds up. I mean, it slows down because there's less happening, but all of a sudden,
oh, camp's coming.
All of a sudden, it's Bourbon A.
Yes, camp will be here before you know it.
And it happens really, really fast. So, anyway, hope you enjoyed the kicker talk. We're doing our best, guys. People love it, though. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. And read us, WGNRadio.com/Bears. The Athletic, subscribe. Can't do Welcome Adam anymore, though.
It's Hang with Adam. I don't know.
Hang with Adam.
Yes. Come read Adam.
Come read Adam. There you go. All right. Please rate and review the podcast. We appreciate you doing that. You can find it anywhere. Google Play, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify. Podcast is everywhere. We appreciate you listening. Appreciate you giving us love. We'll talk to you next week.
History, spaghetti. These are the things of a boot country called Italia. Hello, I'm Joe Romano of Romano Tours. For two generations, my family has provided high-quality tours of Italy to people from all over the world, but mostly Long Island and Jersey.